America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And maybe, maybe it's just not a good idea to have President Biden talk anymore about the issue of the day. The issue of the day is Afghanistan, which has a profound impact on safety and security and the economy and everything else regarding the United States of America. And yet, when he speaks about it, it's a disaster. Apparently, there is a new interview, exclusive interview he just did with ABC News, in which he, quote, opened up about his decision to withdraw and said he did not see a way to withdraw from Afghanistan without chaos ensuing, which is unbelievable. Fortunately, not every politician is that befuddled and confused and off base. And that's why it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Governor Chris Christie, two-term governor of New Jersey, and one of the Republican candidates for president back in 2016. He's also the author of an upcoming book. It's not finished yet, but it's called Republican Rescue, Saving the Party from the Truth Deniers, Conspiracy Theorists, and the Dangerous Policies of Joe Biden. Governor Christie, when I first read the title of your book a couple of weeks ago, I thought it was a rescue of Republicans. It's called Republican Rescue. This may have to be a rescue by Republicans, given everything we've been through the last couple of days, don't you think?
It's a dual rescue, Michael. It's we have to rescue our own party so that our party is going to be there to be able to rescue the country.
Okay, right now, the situation is so awful. We'll play this for you as soon as we get it, because I'd love to get your reaction. Oh, okay, this just broke from ABC News, and it's an interview with Biden explaining his decision to withdraw. I want you to listen to it, Governor, and respond, if you don't mind. Here's the President of the United States.
Look at what's happened over the last week. Was it a failure of intelligence, planning, execution, or judgment?
Look, I don't think it was a fair look. It was a simple choice, George. When the Taliban, let me back and put it another way. When you had the government of Afghanistan, the leader of that government getting in a plane and taking off and going to another country, when you saw the significant collapse of the Afghan troops we had trained, up to 300,000 of them, just leaving their equipment and taking off. That was, you know, I'm not, this is that, that's what happened. That's simply what happened.
But we've all seen the pictures. We've seen those hundreds of people packed into a C-17. We've seen Afghans falling.
That was 4 days ago, 5 days ago.
What did you think when you first saw those pictures?
What I thought was we have to gain control of this. We have to move this more quickly. We have to move in a way in which we can take control of that airport. And we did.
So you don't think this could have been handled? This actually could have been handled better in any way? No mistakes?
No, I don't think it could have been handled in a way that we're going to go back in hindsight and look. But the idea that somehow there's a way to have gotten out without chaos ensuing, I don't know how that happens.
Governor Christie, I'd love to get your response.
It's so outrageous on so many levels that I don't know whether I'm more outraged by the lack of caring for what he wrought or the lack of understanding of his responsibility. But both are incredibly troubling for the future of the country over the next 3 years. Look, what he should have done, and I said this from the beginning, is a force should have been left in the country to be able to prevent it from once again becoming a terrorist haven that could be used to launch attacks against the United States. There were two reasons for going into Afghanistan in the first place. One, to hunt Osama bin Laden and those responsible for the 9/11 massacre. And two, to be able to try to prevent that for being a terrorist nest again from which the United States could be attacked. Now, we still have troops in Germany since the 1940s. We have troops in South Korea since the 1950s, all because keeping that level of stability is in America's national interest. For Joe Biden to not understand that is a fundamental failing of his understanding of what is in America's national interest. And let's say you agree with him and you didn't want to have even a small force remaining to keep that stability. Then you need to evacuate everyone before you withdraw. You need to not give up the Bagram Air Force Base so you can use that as a place to evacuate people out of the country, both Americans and those who supported the United States. And I will tell you, Michael, the only people today besides Joe Biden who are not looking at that as a failure are China, Russia, and Iran, who all believe that this is another step in America's diminishment as a world power and a world influence.
I don't see how anyone can disagree with that. Of course, I would add to that list the other individual voice that thinks that this has actually been a triumph and a demonstration of strength and courage. Nancy Pelosi made that comment today.
Of course she is, Michael, because Nancy Pelosi is in the midst of such a dream come true for her that she has a president of the United States who is so inept that he just goes along with every bad idea she and her caucus come up with, that she doesn't care what else he does as long as he keeps signing the stupid bills that she and her caucus send up to the Hill, send up from the Hill.
Okay, but that game is going to be over pretty soon. Do you think that her dreams will continue to come true in November of 2022, when she her? No, of course. I mean, it doesn't look so good for them maintaining control of Congress, does it?
It doesn't, because two things really matter in this circumstance, Michael: incompetence and being out of step with the American people. And they're displaying both the incompetence of the way this was done in Afghanistan and her cheerleading for that incompetence. And secondly, being out of step with the American people. The American people do not want to have critical race theory taught in their classrooms. The American people do not want a massive government that's in every aspect of its life. The American people do not want to see us be a weaker nation around the world. And that's what the Democrats are giving us now. And they're going to send a very clear message in 2022, the American people are. And I believe they'll return at least the House of Representatives to the Republicans. And if we get the best candidates we can, they'll return the United States Senate to us as well.
I do believe that that is the trend of things, because it's very, very difficult to look at the record of this administration on a range of issues where they just haven't responded in a credible way. One of the things that President Biden had said was going to be a priority for him was immigration reform. And the issue of immigration has been all but ignored, while the flow across the border, where the first aspect of immigration reform, as everybody agrees, has to be border security. We will get to that, and we get to more about Republican Rescue, which is the name of the upcoming book by our guest, Chris Christie. An honor to have him to experience some breaking news, but I wish it could be more encouraging breaking news. This is sad for the administration, but it's sad for the country as a whole. Right back with more from former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie.
It's pathetic.
The Michael Medved Show.
It's not responsible. It's beneath the dignity. I keep saying that, but we keep getting further beneath the dignity.
I I haven't seen the new book by Chris Christie yet, partially because it hasn't been finished yet or published, but it will be soon. It's called Republican Rescue, Saving the Party from Truth Deniers, Conspiracy Theorists, and the Dangerous Policies of Joe Biden. And the title alone makes me want to read it, Governor Christie. I do know, because you've said it before, and it seems more important now to keep in mind, there's such a great temptation to just go into this next election, the off-year election in, the midterm election in 2022, basically just to concentrate on all the terrible things the Democrats are doing or trying to do and basically attack, attack, attack. But I know you believe that it's also worthwhile to have a platform for change and a Republican agenda that would actually appeal to people on its own and would help make the country better. What do you think would be the most important issues to emphasize with that kind of agenda to win back the House and the Senate?
Well, I think first we have to stand up for what's going on in the classrooms across this country and say that what Republicans believe is that educational decisions are best made by parents and teachers at the local level and not dictated to them by members of Congress, the educational bureaucracy, or the teachers unions across this country. We have lost a year and a half of education of our children because of the COVID pandemic, and we need to get focused back on what's happening inside every classroom, and Republicans need to stand up for supporting parents to be the ones who are making those choices for their children. We need to get back to a society that absolutely values and rewards work. The idea that we have a labor shortage in this country because the government, the federal government, is paying people more to sit on their couch than they could make if they were out working is an outrage. And we need to get people back to work because there's value in work, both not just monetary, but there's intrinsic value in going to work every day and doing a job that needs to be done in this country. Our party needs to stand for that. And we need to stand for the idea that around the world, America will still be a force for good. And not only by having our military do things it needs to do, that's secondary. It's by showing in this country every day that a democracy can work, that a republic is the right way to go for the rest of the world, and to continue to allow people to want to emulate us around the world and be our allies. That's part of what makes America strong, both at home and around the world.
Do you believe that Republican unity is an important goal, or do you go with a school that a whole series of tough primaries across the country actually makes the party stronger?
Listen, I think primaries for the right reasons make us stronger. If the primaries are going to be about what our policies should be tomorrow as a party in any individual state to help make that state and our country a better place, that's great. If the primaries are motivated by backwards looking things, by arguing about the past, by grievance politics, well, that just weakens our party and makes people think that we care more about settling old scores than we care about making sure that everyone has a better future in this country full of opportunity and prosperity and peace. And that's what we need to be thinking about. So it depends, Michael, on what motivates the primary. But if it's backwards, grievance, vindictive politics, that's bad for the party and as a result, bad for our country.
What a great answer. And in terms of what is going on with Afghanistan right now, which I think is going to be on people's minds even a year from now, 2 years from now, it's going to be there. What should the Republican position be other than that this is completely messed up and incompetent and inept? Beyond that, what we should emphasize should be?
We now, I think, we have no choice, given that we've now ceded almost all of the land in Afghanistan, except for one airport, to the Taliban, that now our goal should be to send in the amount of force that is necessary to make sure that every American and every person who supported our cause in Afghanistan who wants to leave are going to be permitted to leave safely and securely by the American military. And that's what we need to do. That would not have been my plan, as I said earlier in the earlier segment from the beginning. But now that we've ceded almost every inch of Afghanistan back to the Taliban, we have limited choices left. And what we owe is to the people, our own citizens, and to the people who supported us in Afghanistan. We owe it to them to get them out of that country safely so they're not subject to the awful barbarism that, you know, typified the Taliban rule 20 years ago.
I know that you were the U.S. attorney in the state of New Jersey when New Jersey lost more people on September 11th than any state other than New York. Do you believe that the war on terror is over or should be over, or is this going to be a continued matter to be addressed by the United States government?
Only American citizens of some stripe, mostly the progressive stripe, could think that the war on terror is over because they live in an instant gratification society. Our enemies don't time these things with watches. They don't time them with stopwatches. They time them with calendars. And they are willing to wait till we drop our guard to be able to come back after us. And they are celebrating today at what the gift that Joe Biden has given them in Afghanistan. And I'll tell you something else, Michael. We should be talking to our supposed allies in Pakistan who fed, clothed, and housed the Taliban for 20 years. To get them back into Afghanistan to take over this country. So, no, the war on terror is not over. And for any of us from New Jersey and New York in particular, who lost so many citizens on 9/11, the idea that we would allow the place where the 9/11 massacre was born and executed to be back in the hands of the people who nurtured that is a disgrace. And for him to do it within weeks of the 20th anniversary of September 11th, is an absolute insult to the families of the loved ones who were lost on that day and an insult to the memories and to the families of those who lost soldiers in Afghanistan fighting the war in the aftermath of that attack.
And amazingly well said, and good for you. And the book is, which is coming out, when is the release date for the book, Republican
Rescue? The release date is November 16th. And, Michael, having been an author yourself, you know the greatest words I'm about to tell you. The book has been put to bed. It is done, and it is at the printer, and it is going to be ready to be, hopefully, in people's hands all over this country on November 16th.
That's terrific, and that's 1 year ahead of the next election, the one coming up in 2022, and you've got 3 years to go before that other election of 2024. Governor Chris Christie, always an honor and a pleasure. I hope you'll come back and we'll speak again about the issues of the day. One of the issues that never goes away, not in the Northwest, Sasquatch, coming up. Listening to the Michael Medved show for some time, you already know that I have a long-standing fascination with Sasquatch and scientific evidence of Sasquatch and the search for Sasquatch, and we've had guests on the show before about that. But something really, really remarkable happened is I saw a movie, and the movie is called Hunting Bigfoot. And it's just doggone it, one of the best movies I've seen this year. And even if I weren't a Sasquatch freak, I would love this movie because it's really about human beings who become obsessed with this pursuit. I actually think it's going to be an Oscar contender for Best Documentary just because of the humanity of the film. And I have agreed, after seeing it, after reviewing it, our review is already aired, I've agreed to help promote the movie. to advertise for it, which I'm proud to do in this case. Let me welcome the director and the primary producer. The director's name is Taylor Gooderson, and he is a Northwest born and raised on Bainbridge Island, right?
That's right, Michael. Bainbridge Island. And thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. And Lee Savage, who is the CEO of Xenon Pictures, he's an Academy Award nominee for working on the screenplay of Straight Outta Compton. Lee, glad to have you on the show.
Michael, thanks. Thanks for really appreciate your helping us out here and that you like the movie and see what we've seen in it.
No, I love the movie because it's, first of all, it's about extremely charismatic, lovable kooks. And one of them is John Green, who basically has devoted his life to living on the margins of society, other than when he heads off into the woods looking for Bigfoot. Now, had either of you been particularly interested in Bigfoot before this film?
No, Michael, I really wasn't all that interested in it, to tell you the truth. I had read a book written by Robert Pyle, where Bigfoot Rocks Crossing the Dark Divide. I imagine you're familiar with that book.
Yep.
And I know Bob personally, and am very aware of these Bigfoot obsessives, or as he refers to them, as people with Bigfoot gold fever. And so in some ways that's what inspired this exploration, is being aware of that piece of it.
Now, go ahead.
I would add to that, I grew up in Magnolia. I'm from Seattle. My brother was in the Sasquatch Patrol in Boy Scouts. And, we've been living, if you grew up in the Northwest, you've been living with the legacy of Bigfoot for a long time. Now, you have to ask yourself, if there's nothing to it, why did the FBI allocate funds to attempt to determine Bigfoot's existence? Pretty amazing when you think about it.
Yeah, I'm sure they're trying to help get Bigfoot involved, helping to find D.B. Cooper. but in any event, it's one of those things where talk a little bit about this guy, John Green, and how, because you must have spent literally years with him, including some pretty brutal expeditions into the Cascades, sort of centered around North Bend, right?
That's right. We spent over 4 years filming this, starting early in 2016 and then right up to before the pandemic began, March of 2020, and off and on throughout those 4 years, and all around North Bend, up the Cascades, up Pacific Crest Trail, and in all different types of conditions, rain, wind, and snow. And sometimes I thought the camera gear would stop working, but yeah, it was a journey, to say the least. We were out there a lot.
And basically, there's kind of a surprise ending here, because there's a lot of frustration, obviously, in the search for Bigfoot. But with what you have seen in doing this film and other research that you've done as a background for this film, would you say you're at least open to the idea, of some of the experts you interview on air on the film say they are, to the idea that this primate, as referred to in your movie, actually does exist?
Absolutely. And again, I'll point to Robert Pyle, who is in our film. He's seen throughout a number of times. And he's a very respected scientist. His background is really in studying butterflies. He has a great interest in Bigfoot and really looks at it from a scientific perspective and says there's a better probability than not that it does exist, and speculates there's 500 to 5,000 Bigfoot, in fact, between Northern California and Alaska. He assigns an 80% probability to that, actually. And that's because due to the tracks he's discovered and sounds he's heard out there, as a biologist, that he has no better explanation than Bigfoot. And, you know, who am I to say he is wrong? I mean, I have not personally studied this. I'm not a scientist, so I don't feel like I could just completely dismiss it. I feel like you have to have an open mind to it.
Well, the in terms of the two principal figures that you have who you follow in their Bigfoot expeditions, are they still at it? Are they still out there in the woods, sometimes for weeks at a time, trying to track scat and footprints, noises, anything?
John and Ben, you're referring to. Yes, not as much as I'd say they were the last 4 years, but both have, as you know from watching the film, a huge interest in this. And
obsessive
are still out there
interest.
To a degree. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah,
I guess, Michael, you might consider them taking a break at the moment, but I'm seeing some, it looks like they're going to redouble their efforts here shortly. And this is the way these things go. You know, there's an intensive amount of time searching and then a break, and then you kind of recharge your battery and then you go back and look again. With new evidence.
Well, if people want to look at some of that new evidence directly, go to our website, michaelmedved.com, and you can find out information about Hunting Bigfoot, which is a sensational film. You will be talking about it after you see it, and you'll feel like you've gotten to know the principal human component, where they talk about estranged family members and some of the lack of respect for their obsession. The film opens this Friday, August 20th, at the Admiral Theater, historic Admiral Theater in West Seattle, and Friday, August 27th, at the Varsity Theater in University District in Seattle. It continues to play at the Linwood Theater on Bainbridge Island and the North Bend Theater in North Bend. And for anybody who loves local Seattle lore and some of that specific atmosphere that in the 25 years that I've lived here, I've come to savor so spectacularly, it's very much on display in the film Hunting Bigfoot. Congratulations to this, and this is one of those rare films where I do hope there's a sequel with even more to reveal. Pleasure talking to Lee Savage and Taylor Gooderson, the producer and director, respectively, of what is a remarkable film. Another film, actually a series on streaming, we will get to coming up on the Medved Show. Medved Show. One of the questions that has come up, and I'm actually writing about it right now, it's come up as we approach the 20th anniversary of September 11th, is why we were actually able to get together as a country. You remember that dramatic scene where all the members of Congress, Republicans and Democrats, senators and representatives, they stood on the east front steps of the Capitol building and they sang out God Bless America. That was on the afternoon, the evening of September 11th, and it was remarkable. And today, all we seem able to do is to call each other names and basically to argue about stuff that should be beyond argument, like public health issues, for goodness sake. And by the way, speedy recovery wishes to Governor Abbott of Texas, who apparently had even had a booster shot a third booster shot, and yet still got sick with COVID, though the symptoms appear to be very mild and he should be fine. But with all of that going on right now, the one thing you can say about Joe Biden and his handling of the Afghanistan situation is he's brought people together who would never get together. For instance, if you think about all of the conservatives who have been so outspoken about Joe Biden, then you add on Don Lemon. Yeah, Don Lemon of CNN, who said this about President Biden and his lame speech trying to justify America's sudden and catastrophic withdrawal. Clip 7.
Buck stops here. He says the buck stops with him. Taking responsibility, that's important. Except you can't really say the buck stops with me if you don't really take the blame. President Biden pointed the finger at Afghans themselves. He said didn't want to leave earlier. And at the Afghan government, he said, wanted to avoid a crisis of confidence. Afghan political leaders who fled the country, the Afghan military.
Okay, and of course, he also pointed fingers at President Trump and basically said that something that none of his advisors say is true, which is that everybody recognized that there would be the sudden unraveling and complete collapse of the Afghan army and the Afghan government if America made it known that we were on a ticking clock getting out of Afghanistan. You'll notice that it's not just Don Lemon. Over on the Republican side of things, Representative Adam Kinzinger, one of the rising stars in the House of Representatives, Representative Kinzinger said this about Biden's speech. This is clip 8.
I thought it was a terrible speech. It was a speech that to me seemed like was focused on stemming the upcoming political fallout from his decision and from this disaster. And Wolf, we are being filled and inundated right now with people in the Republicans and the Democrats pointing fingers at who's to blame for this. I'm going to say something that probably most politicians don't say. The Republicans have failed you, and the Democrats have failed you. The last president failed you on Afghanistan, and this one is failing you on Afghanistan.
Okay, and what he means by the last president failing you on Afghanistan, that's what Mike Pence addresses. Would love to hear from him, by the way. Suggesting that Trump's deal with the Afghan Taliban was actually working. And of course, the evidence is, at least according to many sources, that part of the deal he made was forcing the Afghan government to release 5,000 Taliban prisoners who helped a good deal in undoing that Afghan government that they had always opposed. Then there's Ilhan Omar. You want to talk about ridiculous points of view and trying to make it about her and not about our country or even about Afghanistan. Congresswoman Omar, Democrat from Minnesota, was on the MSNBC Joy Reid show. Listen to what she had to say.
These crazy people on the right doing, you know, what they always do with their fear-mongering and their hateful rhetoric. The reality is, you know, regardless of where you come from, immigrants and refugees are highly motivated. They are people who are seeking a better life. They come to this country, they put their head down. Everybody in every single community has bad apples, but that is not the result of collective failure as refugees or as immigrants when we come to the United States. And I know what some of these people are worried about is that they're worried that refugees like myself, when they come to this country, will outshine them. That is just their own failure and their inability to find success in the ways in which refugees have found success in this country.
Okay, really? Were you worried that more Ilhan Omars would come to this country and outshine you? Anybody? I mean, how appalling that is. And again, she wants to make it about her and what a shining and splendid example she is of what, I am not sure. Scandal-plagued, extreme left, America-hating, I can understand why people would be reluctant about refugees like Ilhan Omar, and partially because of the ingratitude she has shown for her own adopted country, which she regularly runs down, and in a very one-sided way. Then there's Jen Psaki, who's asked about a very real question about the Americans who are now being evacuated, what they call a NEO, non-combatant evacuation operation. This is what Jen Psaki had to say about a guarantee that all the Americans would get out safely. Listen.
Do you offer any guarantee to the Americans and Afghan allies that if they remain there past the end of the month, U.S. troops will help them evacuate past the end of the month?
Weijia, our focus right now is undoing the work at hand and on the task at hand, and that is day by day getting as many American citizens, as many SIV applicants, as many members of a vulnerable population who are eligible to be evacuated to the airport and out on planes. And we're going to do that in an expeditious fashion. That is the focus of the president, of our Secretary of Defense, of our Secretary of State, and everybody on our national security team. So that is where we will keep our efforts. Go ahead.
Okay, but she doesn't answer the question at all about whether they'll keep that operation going as long as Americans are still there. Speaking of something that keeps going, there's a six-part series that's streaming right now. And it's actually darn amusing. It is, as the title indicates, a satire of big classic Broadway musicals. It's called Schmigadoon.
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minute.
Cecily Strong and Keegan-Michael Key play a bickering modern couple who wander into another realm, a magical, mystical small town from about 100 years ago where the citizens love to break into song and dance. That village is called Schmigadoon! Exclamation point. Now streaming on Apple TV+.
We can't wait. It's like magic. We're in an actual musical.
Please, God, no.
This clever and captivating six-part series is an affectionate tribute to Broadway musicals of the Golden Era, with particular reference to Music Man, Carousel, Sound of Music, and, of course, Brigadoon. The plot is stretched out and needlessly complicated in order to fill six half-hour episodes, but the joyous energy, musical references, and occasionally touching moments make this audacious concoction consistently captivating. It's rated TV-14, 3 stars for Schmigadoon. For Broadway fans, it will be impossible to resist. And speaking of a very possible to resist, next time we will play you tape that we just got. It is a dreadlocked white dude who completely loses his mind with an anti-vax rant and rage in front of a major city's city council. And he accuses the city council members of being good little Nazis while he is shouting at them. It's inspiring. We will also be welcoming Ben Cohen to our show. We've been talking about doing this for a long time. He wants to talk about police reform. We'll give him a chance to do that. He is, of course, the originator of Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream, together with his partner, Jerry Greenfield. And maybe, just maybe, he'll even answer some questions about his controversial anti-Israel policies. Then Ben Sasse, a very different Ben. Of all the statements on Afghanistan, the most persuasive and important, it seems to me, is the one issued by Senator Sasse. He will be joining us tomorrow, next time, in this greatest nation on God's green earth.